Welcome to the La Trobe University podcast. I'm your host, Michaela Delahunty. Here to discuss the present situation in Zimbabwe, we're joined by Dr. David Dorwood. Dr. Dorwood is an honorary research associate for the history program at La Trobe University. He's an expert in African economic history, racism, and colonialism. He joins us today to discuss the current situation in Zimbabwe. This isn't the first election that Mugabe has had.
Oh, no.
Against Morgan Tsvangirai. And it also isn't the first one that he's used violent methods to...
No, it's not the first one. Mugabe has an increasing record of using violence and intimidation as part of government policy. I mean, what's happened is that the security services, the army, the police, the Central Intelligence Organization, have been politicized. They're really run now by ZANU-PF apparatchiks, and the people involved really are in a situation where they have to go along with government policy. If you're a common policeman and you don't go along with it, well, you know, you lose your job, if not your life. So that it's really a state that's increasingly operates on the basis of coercion. But that's been going on for, you know, the better part of a decade or more.
So why has it only been now that it seems that the world is up in arms and everyone is condemning the regime?
It's become more and more overt. At one stage, it was mainly Mugabe using sort of the so-called war veterans and the police and the army against white settlers. And that gave it a racist overtone that really did mean that the Americans and the British, who were his major critics, could be criticized by Mugabe as being themselves racist. I mean, they worry about white farmers. They don't really care about blacks, right, who've been, you know, dispossessed of their land. But increasingly, as opposition to the mismanagement of the country has grown, and opposition has grown, Mugabe has turned on the opposition. I think the international diplomatic community often has shown itself willing to tolerate dictators as long as dictators are doing things that seem to be, you know, in Western government interests.
From the position of a citizen of Zimbabwe, it's been said that Robert Mugabe's liberation icon is wearing thin. And I want to ask, it seems that he still has many supporters in Zimbabwe, despite the 150,000% inflation, despite the killings and the intimidation, despite the widespread hunger and abject poverty. Is it fear that would make an average Zimbabwean support the Mugabe regime, or is it some sort of misguided fear of the return of colonialism?
Oh, I think it's both. You know, the government controls the media, and therefore for many in Zimbabwe, particularly in the rural areas, it's hard to see any alternative to government propaganda. And the government has been very effective in blocking, if not actually stopping, the Voice of America and the BBC from getting through, of convincing the people that these media outlets really represent old-line white racism. And remember, many of the average Zimbabweans, it isn't that long ago that you had white minority rule in what was then Rhodesia. I mean, you know, the transition to power came in 1980, so there's plenty of people around who can remember what it was like before. And I think the other thing about it is that ZANU-PF played a carrot and stick approach. I mean, if you're loyal to the party, then you get access to what limited resources are going. Most of the officers in those areas came out of the liberation struggle. These were guys who served in the guerrilla organization.
They'd be getting quite old.
They're in their 60s and 70s, right? What's happened, though, is they are the principal beneficiaries of the seizure of white lands and the takeover of white businesses, so that people in the government, people in senior people in ZANU-PF, people in the army, the police, and the security forces have ended up having a finger in all kinds of pies, all right? They worry about basically two major things, I think. One is that if ZANU-PF loses power, they lose access to this largesse, this ill-gotten gain. And without it, they know full well what life can be like in Zimbabwe. They have seen it, all right? Secondly, many of them have been involved in committing atrocities. And, you know, if there were a court set up by the UN of crimes against humanity, many of the senior people in ZANU-PF would find themselves potentially facing the rest of their life in prison. That really does focus the mind.
It's been said that the economy under Mugabe is likely to collapse.
It's not likely to collapse. It has collapsed.
It has collapsed.
Oh, yes. I mean, when you've got inflation that now is something like 2,000,000%, right? I mean, that's just, you know, unbelievable figures. It means that there's shortages of everything. It means it's really very difficult for people to survive if they don't have access to external funding, all right? For example, there's a lot of Zimbabweans back in Zimbabwe who really do survive on remittance sent back from Australia, from South Africa, from elsewhere by family members who send back relatively small quantities of money, but it's in hard cash that they can then use to buy goods. People have resorted where they can to subsistence farming, and it's hard to do in the slums of the cities.
South African President Thabo Mbeki has been accused of doing little more than making limp-wristed remarks and contributing nothing of value. Do you expect he'll step up to the plate and lead the African Union, Government of National Unity, etc., to impose some pressure on the Mugabe regime?
I think there's a great deal of pressure being put on Thabo Mbeki at the moment. I mean, he hasn't proved a very decisive head of state. I mean, he really is the hand-picked person of the Western diplomatic corps. I mean, when Nelson Mandela was to step down and hand over, there was a great deal of pressure from the West, a great deal of support for Thabo Mbeki.
He
was seen as a black Alexander Downer, and, you know, someone who wouldn't rock the boat, who would be amenable to Western commercial interests, and he's basically a closet conservative. There's also, though, a factor in Thabo Mbeki's response, in that Morgan Tsvangirai represents really sort of a trade unionist, populist sort of approach towards politics. He's strongly supported and has strong links with bodies like COSATU, the Congress of South African Trade Unions, with Mbeki's arch rival Jacob Zuma within the ANC. And so the victory of Morgan Tsvangirai over Robert Mugabe has resonance within the domestic politics of the ANC in South Africa. And that in part explains it, though I think it's true to say that Thabo Mbeki has not proven a great judge of character, either in terms of some of his ministers in government, in terms of foreign policy, not a very sophisticated approach, sadly. I mean, to many ordinary Africans in Southern Africa, Robert Mugabe is still a hero for what he has done. Though he's, you know, they too recognize his faults. I think it's again a question of the level of sophistication of the electorate.
I just want to talk about the sanctions that have been imposed on Zimbabwe. They've been called ineffective, yet Desmond Tutu has called for legitimate and significant sanctions. What would constitute as something that's a significant sanction for a country that has so little?
Well, one thing you could do is simply cut off what supply of oil and other things go into the country and bring it down in a hurry, all right? You could put an arms embargo on Zimbabwe that really worked. The trouble there is that Zimbabwe has powerful allies like China, and China has a very poor human rights record. So it would probably not really pay much attention. In fact, it would probably block in the Security Council with its veto any moves to really impose the type of sanctions that would cripple the regime.
What can be done? Is there anything that can be done?
Oh, you can introduce certain sanctions that make it increasingly uncomfortable on the elite.
Do you think that will happen, though?
Yeah, I suspect it will. They'll withdraw sort of student visas. They'll make it difficult for ZANU-PF politicians to travel internationally.
Some sections of the media have said that that's tokenistic.
Of course it's tokenistic, but what can you do? You have very few levers to apply against Zimbabwe. The only country that can do it is South Africa, and South Africa can cut off the electricity supply to Zimbabwe, the flow of oil, the flow of goods into Zimbabwe. If it were to cut off those supplies, then other countries in the region would fall into line, and Zimbabwe would be isolated. Yes, there would be some people who would die of starvation, some people who would die in hospitals because they don't have electricity supply. But that's already happening anyway. What I fear is something rather more traumatic, and that's at what stage do, say, the common police, the common rank and file soldiers, who after all are the ones with the guns, decide enough's enough and they shoot the officers. And then you have a real revolution, and then you have real chaos, and then you will have open fighting in the streets between that lumpen proletariat, those unemployed, ill-educated young men who are the so-called war veterans, all right, who are the thugs of ZANU-PF. Fight between them and others. There'll be payback killings. It'll get really bloody. And if that happens, I suspect Western business will not only not go back to investing in Zimbabwe, but will be tempted to pull its investments out of elsewhere in Southern Africa. And it could be a major financial disaster, as well as political disaster and diplomatic disaster, for the whole of the Southern African region. I think there could be some real sort of disastrous long-term ramifications if the international community doesn't sort of get its act together.
I just want to bring it back to something that you mentioned where you were talking about South Africa switching off the electricity and cutting off oil. What would it take for South Africa to actually do that?
Oh, I don't know, but I mean, I think it's not a what happens in Zimbabwe any longer.
Okay.
I think at this stage, it's what happens in terms of international diplomatic pressure put upon South Africa and upon the ANC, and, you know, the not so subtle hints that this is bad for investment.
So it all seems to come back to investment.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the great leverage one has. These are governments crying out for foreign direct investment. You know, you have to be careful. You have to be subtle about it because the Chinese and the Indians are right in there. China has already supplanted Britain as Africa's second largest trading partner. There are talks of China exceeding the United States in terms of trade with sub-Saharan Africa by 2020. So we're talking about major shifts in geopolitics.
Malcolm Fraser has said that the African countries are the ones best left to deal with the situation themselves. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I think what Malcolm Fraser is saying is the reality that the West and even the UN has really very little leverage in this situation, and that, yes, it would be best if the African, the AU and SADC, Southern African Development Community, did something. But if they don't, what do you do? I suspect that SADC and the AU will simply sit on their hands. There'll be a lot of wringing of hands and crocodile tears. But I rather suspect that what's going to happen is it totally degenerates into chaos. And you know, I mean, at this stage, the economy, everything is collapsed. There are probably almost as many Zimbabweans outside of Zimbabwe as in it now. It's lost most of its professional class, teachers, lawyers, I mean, all kinds of people have fled, doctors, nurses, you name it, teachers. A lot of those will never return. And I'm not talking about simply whites. I'm talking about black doctors and nurses who now operate in the UK, the US, and even Australia. Their children have settled in schools where they've emigrated to, and yeah, it'll be hard slog going back. What I'm saying, though, is that I think particularly the South Africans have to show a lead, and if they don't, well, they'll rue the consequence of it.
Will it take God to remove Robert Mugabe?
Well, Robert Mugabe is not a young man. The real problem is that Robert Mugabe is now much more an image figure than a real wielder of power. I think power has already shifted to the generals in the army, the police, the national security services. I think Robert Mugabe, the liberator of Zimbabwe, is now in some ways a bit of captive of a nasty brew which he cooked up himself.